For Wednesday, February 11th, I'd like to open a public hearing and a work session on HCR 11. Testimony, Representative Buckley. Oh, and Representative Olson.
Sometimes he'll do it. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature. I'm happy to be here with my colleague, Representative Olson. We both came in legislature at the same period of time, and we had an incredibly great experience working with our former chief clerk of the Oregon House, Ramona Lyon Kennedy, and we brought forward a resolution in honor of her contributions to our legislature during her long career. And Madam Chair, I know how much you like going into lengthy discussions about every memorial, but I'm gonna refrain from going into a lengthy discussion, because those of us who worked with Ramona know that she is a remarkable person, and in terms of being a parliamentarian for a legislative body, internationally known and respected. And following her resignation last summer, this is one of the things that first came to my mind, and I'm sure it came to my colleague's mind as well, that we did want to honor her. We couldn't get a draft in time to get names on, but I do have a bill back, and I'll try to get as many House members who would like to join on this morning. We'd love to have we'd love to have 60 if we can, but I appreciate your time and consideration, and would like to request this to be passed so we can honor a wonderful public servant for the state of Oregon. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I'm state representative from House District 15, Albany and Benton County area. I think my colleague here has shared a lot, but Ramona's kind of unique. I mean, it's if you got to know her, and it's interesting. I wouldn't call her a counselor or a clinical psychologist or anything like that, but whenever you went inside her room to talk, nothing ever left. And that's one of the things I really appreciated about her, and so there was a confidence there. I really do. One thing also I greatly appreciated about her is she clearly understood rules, regulations, and policies, and she stayed true to those. And I know that she got beat up from time to time, because I got to tell you, when, just like Peter was sharing that, I mean, we came into this together in 05, the Republicans were in control at that time on the House. She got beat up, and she stayed true to what she believed in, and it was kind of unfortunate. And then you also saw that happen later on, too, through the progressions of different structures of houses and everything over the next few years. But she always, I believe, from my perspective, she always stayed true, and she was consistent, and that's one of the things I greatly appreciated about her. So this is an easy HCR that we'd love to have you pass, and would love to not say roast her,
but there might be a little.
We'd love to bring that, you know, to the floor.
I spent a lot of time in her office being mentored and helped, and she's a wonderful woman. Thank you so much for bringing this forward. With that, I will accept a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before we do that, I wondered if you would be open to more reminiscing about their first term when Republic, maybe not. Okay.
Is that the good old days, Representative?
Madam Chair, I move HCR 11 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 11 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Only to say it's a pleasure to do this, and I thank the gentleman for bringing it forward today. Thank you.
Any objections? No objections. The motion passes. Representative Buckley, would you carry the bill? With Representative Olson, so co-carry the bill. Thank you very much. So with that, we'll close the public hearing and work session. And I will open a public hearing and work session on HCR 5. Representative Whitsitt, would you...
Good afternoon, Chair Hoyle, Vice Chair Smith-Warner, and Gilliam. I'm Gail Whitsitt, and I represent House District 56, which is the southern half of Lake and Klamath counties to the California border. Today, I'm presenting HCRs 5, 6, and 7. They had me do it all at once, and so it's going to seem like a marathon, but it really, we'll keep it as short as we can.
A group of short sprints, but what we can do is we'll go through...
5 first.
Yeah, go 5 first. Yes.
So HCR 5 is a resolution. I believe there are handouts that you have there if you want to follow along. A resolution to honor Oregon's greatest basketball coach, Danny Miles, based on his total wins as a collegiate coach in the NAIA. Coach Miles is only the second coach in the history of college basketball to pass the 1,000 win mark. I would like to read you just a part of his biography. And if you'll follow along with me on the handout, because there's so many statistics, I can't remember them all, so I'm going to read part of this. Danny Miles began his 44th season at Oregon Tech when the Hustlin' Owls took to the hardwoods in October of 14-15. The Medford, Oregon native has reached many milestones during his illustrious career at Oregon Tech, including a 1,004 win to 412 loss record, all coming at Oregon Tech. After earning his 1,000th career victory on February 1st, 2014, Miles became just the second men's basketball coach at a four-year level to reach the 1,000-win plateau. Miles has led the Owls to 3 NAIA 2 national championships, most recently in 2012, while also earning the title in both 2004 and 2008. His 2012 squad finished the year with 34 wins, the most in program history. From November 2009 to December 2011, Miles marched his Hustling Owls to school record 65 straight home victories. Tech holds the record for the most wins at the Division II tournament, 33 total, and is tied with Bethel, Indiana for most national championships, 3. In his tenure at Oregon Tech, Miles has guided 17 men's basketball teams to the national tournament. Other milestones include 3 national basketball titles, 1 national run-up, 1 national third place, 2 elite eights, 14 district or conference titles, 7 district runners-up, and ranked in the NAIA top 20 on 30 different occasions, with the highest ranking first. In addition to being named NAIA National Basketball Coach of the Year in 2004 and 8, Miles was awarded the National Association of Basketball Coaches Coach of the Year in 2012 and was named the national winner of NAIA's Champion of Character Award for all sports in 2009. Miles ranks first in wins in the NAIA ranks and second among coaches at all levels in college basketball. He has set numerous records in his career, both as an athlete and a coach. Upon winning his 500th game at Tech on December 10, 1995, then OIT, President Lawrence Wolf, proclaimed the court, now as Danny Miles Court. Miles was a standout three-sport athlete at Medford High School. After capping a brilliant prep career by being named the school's outstanding athlete in 1963, Miles moved on to Southern Oregon College of Education. During his stay, it's now SOU, he earned All-American honors in football, All-Conference honors in basketball, and was named to the All-District baseball team. A four-year starter at quarterback for the Raiders, Miles set collegiate football's all-time record for all divisions by completing 190 of 247 passes, a 77.9% in his sophomore season. As a freshman, he completed 77 of his passes, and his career percentage was a sparkling 66%. Miles led the nation in passing percentage in 1964 and 1965, and led the nation in total offense in 1965. The versatile Miles was an assistant coach in the Tech football program and head coach of the baseball team. On 4 occasions, his baseball team finished in the top 3 in district. There's a lot of other information I won't go into, but he's coached as the Athletes in Action staff in African nations of Kenya, Rwanda, and he's also given clinics in Austria. And he and his wife, Julie, stay busy in the off season with their 5 children and 19 grandchildren.
Goodness, that's wonderful.
Danny Miles from Klamath Gold.
Okay, with that, I would ask for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move HCR 5 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 5 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Are there any, is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'd just like to note that it is a big moment any time a Grants Pass caveman honors a former Medford Black Tornado. But let it be done now. It's my pleasure to be involved in this. Coach Miles is a great man. Thank you.
And thank you so much for bringing this forward. Really amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, are there any objections? Okay, no objections. Motion passes. Representative Whitsitt, will you carry this bill on the floor? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing and work session, and now we are going to move to HCR 6.
All right,
and thanks. Open a public hearing.
Good afternoon.
And a work session.
Committee Chair Hoyle, Representative Whitsitt, District 56. HCR 6 is a resolution honoring William Kit Kittredge of Lake County, Oregon. Bill is one of the historical figures that the legends of the West are based upon. In his case, a legend does not quite become his larger-than-life influence on the agricultural development of southeastern Oregon with his 19,000 head of cattle and million-plus acre ranch. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also recognized Bill for providing excellent feed and habitat for wildlife on his ranch, as well as for his conservation and prescient water development of the arid landscape. I've included a brief summary of Bill's contribution to the state of Oregon, which Kelsey, who is from Lake County and my assistant, is going to present to us, so I don't have to do all three of these.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelsey Ferry, Representative Whitsitt's legislative assistant. So William Bill Kit Kittredge put together a ranching empire the hard way, piece by piece with grit and determination. Born in 1876 at Fort Simcoe in Washington Territory, Bill Kit grew up with pioneering parents. His mother traveled by wagon on the Oregon Trail, and his father had immigrated during the California Gold Rush of 1849. The willpower and faith that compelled and enabled them to move out west were traits passed down to Kittredge in double doses. Like many other young men in 1892, Kit was just a $25 a month hired hand working in Silver Lake, Oregon. However, not content to spend the rest of his life as a cowboy riding on the coattails of others' success, he saved every penny he made and eventually purchased a 40-acre parcel out in the dusty dunes of Sand Springs, Oregon. With this parcel and the heifers he took in lieu of wages, Kit began to build what would soon become one of the finest cattle operations in the West. He made wise investments, purchasing and leasing land on which to raise and finish his cattle, and constantly made improvements to his property. He turned arid land into irrigated meadows and productive fields, and his great eye for livestock also paid off. In part, Kit's success was due to the fact that he wore many hats. He was a cattleman, a banker, a businessman, a cowboy, a reclamationist, developer, engineer, horseman, and farmer. He constantly diversified his operations. His goals were always expanding, and no obstacle was too great. He was one of the most influential leaders in the state of Oregon during its first 100 years. Though Bill Kit never had a formal education, he was a born leader whose accomplishments included serving as director of the National Cattlemen's Association, president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, vice president of the Pacific States Livestock Marketing Association, the director of Tri-State Livestock Credit Corporation. One of Bill Kitt's proudest accomplishments was founding and serving the president of the Klamath Production Credit Association, an agricultural bank formed to provide loans to farmers and ranchers who were losing their properties due to lack of credit during the Great Depression. At the time of his death in 1958, Kitt owned 19,000 head of raised one iron cattle. He also owned and operated ranches in three states and six counties, including Klamath Lake and Harney County in Oregon, Humboldt in Washoe in Nevada, and Tehama in California. He owned 68,000 deeded acres, 34,500 of which were irrigated hay, pasture, and grain fields. He also had leased land totaling 52,000 acres and held Bureau of Land Management grazing permits in Oregon, Nevada, covering 850,000 acres. In all, Kitt's deeded, leased, and permit lands totaled nearly 1 million acres. Country singer Ian Tyson even wrote a song about Kitt's legendary MC Ranch. Kitt was truly a self-made man who, from modest beginnings as a day worker, became one of the most impressive ranchers of the West. He took risks and had extraordinary resolve to succeed in harsh conditions and difficult times, and was a man of great vision who never lost sight of where he started. His legacy is still very much alive in Lake County, with thanks to his nephew, D.L., Jack Nickel, and his grandniece, Amy Thompson, who have established the M.C. Chuckwagon Western Heritage Museum in Lake County, Oregon.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. With that, I would accept a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move HCR 6 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 6 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, the motion passes. Representative Whitsitt?
I was wondering if Representative McLean would like to carry this on the floor.
Absolutely.
I don't want to make him, and I didn't ask him before, but if he'd like to, I'd like him to do it.
Thank you. Representing Lake County in the legislature, along with Representative Whitsitt, it would be appropriate, and I'd be honored to do so.
Thank you. So, Carrier, Leader McLean. Okay, with that, I will close public hearing and work session. And I will open a public hearing and work session on HCR 7. Testimony, Representative Whitsitt.
Chair Hoyle, Representative Gail Whitsitt, House District 56. Finally, I saved the very best for last. I have an HCR to honor one of Oregon's earliest pioneer women, author and activist, Abigail Scott Duniway. She traveled to the Oregon Territory as a young woman in 1853, married, had a family, became the sole breadwinner, founded a newspaper, wrote 22 books, and was known later as the mother of equal suffrage. And she brought the vote to Oregon's women in 1815. Please see the attached summary, which I have handed out there, for just a small part of her historical contributions. Abigail Jane Scott was born in Illinois in 1834. When she was 17 years old, her life changed dramatically with the death of her mother and brother during the family's grueling trek to Oregon in an ox-drawn cart. Abigail's family settled in Lafayette, Oregon, where she began a career as a school teacher. Just 1 year later, she married Benjamin C. Duniway. Four children promptly followed, spaced less than 2 years apart. By 1859, while Duniway filled her days caring for children and farm chores, she found time in the late evenings to pen her first novel, Captain Gray's Company. Her writing skills literally kept the family afloat when Benjamin suffered a crippling accident and lost a farm. Abigail was now the breadwinner and returned to teaching as well as running a hat shop in Albany. A move to Portland in 1871 offered the family a new start. The women's rights movement was small but active in Portland, and Duniway decided that a woman's newspaper would offer income as well as a valuable outlet for her writing talents. She founded the New Northwest during her first year in Portland after an inspiring visit from national suffrage leader Susan B. Anthony. Politics, fiction, fashion, and domestic advice filled the pages of the popular new publication, which Duniway edited for the next 16 years. She found time to lecture on temperance and women's rights as well, and was active in the Portland Women's Club. Dunaway's reputation grew throughout the entire region, with speaking engagements pouring in from as far away as Idaho City, Boise, and Lewiston, Washington. National suffrage leaders called on her to serve as a vice president in the National Women's Suffrage Association in 1884. Dunaway's suffrage work in the Northwest soon put her in conflict with the national suffrage and temperance movement leaders. She wanted outside organizations to stay out, believing they alienated male supporters because they did not understand local conditions. Traveling some 12,000 miles and giving more than 140 lectures, Dunaway turned her full attention to the Idaho campaign. With local women taking charge, Dunaway led the suffrage referendum campaign to Idaho victory in 1896. She helped mastermind the campaign to victory in Washington State in 1910. Dunaway's efforts to win the right to vote in her home state of Oregon proved much more demanding. From 1884 to 1910, Oregon's male voters defeated suffrage 5 times at the polls. Ironically, Dunaway's own brother, the influential publisher of the Oregonian, editorialized every suffrage measure. Finally, in 1911, Dunaway and her forces mustered the courage to take the issue before the intransigent voters one last time. She led the Oregon Equal Suffrage Association to victory at the polls in 1912. On November 30th, 1912, Dunaway signed Oregon's suffrage proclamation and became the first woman in her state to register to vote. Dunaway's remarkable career as a journalist, lecturer, and suffrage organizer ended when she died in 1915. Her autobiography, Pathbreaking, remains a powerful memoir of her 40 years of service to women's rights, and I'm very pleased to bring this forward.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that we're both here because she did what she did. With that, I would accept a motion.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 7 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Any discussion?
Did he carry that
through? Madam Chair?
Yes.
No,
I just have an interesting side note to that. You may or may not know that in some Portland elementary schools, they do the third grade, they study Portland, the history of Portland, and they put on this wonderful musical called Portland the Musical. Surprisingly, both of my children have been in this, and it's quite marvelous. It was written by a school teacher, and there's one of the most popular scenes is indeed the story of Abigail Scott Dunaway and the conflict with her brother, the editor of the Oregonian, in which somehow they make this into a very happy, cute song in which they're arguing about it. And he says, you'll get women's rights over my dead body. And the narrator says, and she did. And that he apparently passed away in between those last two elections. Okay. And he passed away, and without his editorials at the Oregonian, that apparently had a significant impact on the ability for that to be passed finally on time number 6.
That's a great tidbit.
It is.
You're welcome. Wow.
I hope you'll share that on the floor.
I knew.
Thank you. Any other discussion? With that, any objections? No objections. So the motion passes. Representative Whitsitt, would you like to carry this?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll close the public hearing and the work session. And thank you so much. And thank you for coming. I know it can be a little stressful, but you did a fantastic job.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle.
Okay. Yeah. And with that, I am going to open a public hearing and a work session on HCR 12. Representative Gomberg, I thought.
We're still going.
I could open up yours first. Let me see. I will close the work session on HCR 12 and open the work session on HCR 10. Representative Olson.
Actually, Madam Chair, if you could do 4 at the same time, because they're going to be kind of, you'll understand.
Okay. What. All right. And I will open public hearing work session on HCR 4.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson, state representative from the Albany area. And I do greatly appreciate this opportunity to come in front of you here with these two HCRs, 4 and 10. And just a little bit of history here to remind you that this body in 2011 passed House Bill 3039. And what that did was it created a path for the fallen officers' memorial signs. And if you remember, the next few years, we were busy catching that up a little bit around the state. And we had some sad moments on the House floor. So you're the avenue for this to occur, and it is a great opportunity to share before you these two bills. The first one is HCR 4, deals with Deputy Sheriff Jimmy Shoup. And interesting story, I'm not going to go into great detail because you're going to be listening to it on the House floor when their families are here. In 1947, Jimmy and his sister Janet were born as twin brother and sister back in Nebraska. 3 days later, Charles and Mona Shoup in Portland got the call, drove back to Nebraska, and picked up their two little kids. And it's a neat story when you start kind of unraveling this and everything. But he graduated from David Douglas High School. Always kind of had a heart to want to get into law enforcement. And in the process, he became a reserve deputy with Clackamas County and then worked with Estacada in that process. And in July of 1978, he became a member of the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. He was well known in Clackamas County by a lot of folks. I mean, he was just one of those kind of guys that would reach out and visit with you, and he believed very strongly in community policing. On the evening of November 7th, 1981, he was in the Boring, Oregon area. He had stopped a vehicle for speeding and completed issuing a citation to that driver and returned back to his patrol car. And as he was there, and it was on Orient Street near Kelso Road, he was hit by a 16-year-old girl who was intoxicated at about, they figured, 60 miles per hour, and he was killed at that time. So this is, he left three children, you know, and his wife, you know, behind and everything. And if you jump on the website, you'll see one of his kids. I don't even want to go there right now. But if you jump on his website, you'll see some really neat comments from his kids years later as they grow and hear about their dad, you know, growing up from friends. And it's pretty neat. This is, there is a Dash 1 amendments with that. I think, Aaron, you're aware of them. So that needs to be fixed just a little bit there. But this is really well worth it for what we did 4 years ago in creating that avenue and putting his sign up, you know, through ODOT and recognizing the family. Now, HCR 10, a lot of folks will remember this, and Representative Smith Warner, you may remember this quite well, too. This was a case with Thomas Jeffries. He was with Portland Police Bureau. Thomas, ultimately, he was born in 1962 and graduated from Estacada High School, attended Oregon University, and graduated in 1987, magna cum laude. Shortly after that, he became a reserve deputy with Polk County Sheriff's Office, and then shortly after that, he became a member of the Department of Corrections as a guard. And then he became a member of the Portland Police Bureau in July 20th. And let's see here. Stand fast. 1992. He and his wife, Vicki Cahill, married shortly thereafter. And the night of July 20th, 1997, there was a report of an incident involving a suspect that had just shot a 7-year-old little boy. And one of the other members from the police department had stopped this suspect on Gleason at around 11:30 at night. And Officer Jeffries arrived to back up the officer. The driver of the vehicle that they had stopped took off on foot through some neighborhoods and into back behind the house. And in the process, Officer Jeffries gave pursuit on foot. Now, he's on the radio the whole time. In the process, he gets shot three times. One of those bullets went just right above his vest line into his chest. He was able to return fire, wounds the suspect, and then he also remained on the radio to give information to dispatch what was happening. He was transported to a local hospital shortly thereafter, and he died in the hospital just shortly after midnight. So, you know, Vicky had a little baby 2 months afterwards. And this is another one Representative Barker remembers quite well because he worked with him. I know, I want to say Chief Palusa, Representative Palusa, you know, Carla remembers Officer Jeffries, and this will be another one of those that, you know, I really appreciate you moving forward as well, because we can honor them, and it would be through what we did 4 years ago again with House Bill 3039 for recognizing with the Officer Memorial sign. Then also, Aaron, this also has the Dash 1 amendments too.
Okay, so I would accept, okay, we have testimony from Michael Savaggio.
Loyal members of the committee, for the record, Michael Savaggio speaking for the Oregon Coalition of Police and Sheriff's Deputies. Officer Daryl Turner from the Portland Police Association remembers working with Officer Jeffries, and hope that he could be here personally today. However, that was unworkable, so he's asked me to enter some comments into the record with and by his request and the chair's allowance, I'll just summarize those briefly. On July 20th, 1997, Officer Tom Jeffries made the ultimate sacrifice, giving his life to protect the community he served, and a promising future was silenced in the matter of seconds by a senseless act of violence. We want to thank you for your efforts to honor Tom and keep his memory alive, as it honors others who have given all they have while working to protect the communities that they serve. So, speaking for Officer Turner, I'm proud to say that I knew Tom Jeffries as a dedicated professional and compassionate police officer who loved his family, his job, and his community. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Savaggio. Okay, with that, now I would be ready for a motion on HCR 4.
Madam Chair, I move that we first adopt the Dash 1 amendment to HCR 4.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to HCR 4. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, the amendment is adopted. Vice Chair,
Madam Chair,
another motion.
Funny you should mention it. I move HCR 4 to the floor with a be adopted as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 4 with a be adopted as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? All right. If not, the motion passes. Representative Olson, would you like to carry?
Affirmative.
This? Okay. I will close public hearing and the and the work session, and I would accept another motion.
Madam Chair, is there a
Dash 1?
There is.
Yep. All right, then, Madam Chair, I would move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to HCR 12.
Ten.
Oh, turn it over. I meant to say 10.
I knew that. Thank you. Vice Chair Gilliam has moved to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to HCR 10. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, the amendment is adopted, and I would accept another motion at this point.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 10 to the floor with a be adopted as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 10 with a be adopted as amended recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, the motion passes. Representative Olson, would you?
Yes, ma'am.
Hear this. Thank you. I'll close public hearing and work session. All right, and now we will return to HCR 12.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. It's already open. Okay, I'm going to reopen HCR, a public hearing and work session on HCR 12. Representative Gomberg.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, members of the committee. David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast. A number of meaningful memorials before you today. I'm pleased to present House Concurrent Resolution Number 12, which celebrates the well-lived life of Dr. Laverne Weber, a gentleman who we lost in May of 2014. Now, to consider the life of Dr. Weber, what you really need to do is consider the contemporary history of Newport, Oregon. And I submit to you that if you look around the shores of the Yaquina Bay, what you see is a remarkable success story, a success story that includes things like NOAA, like the Oregon Coast Community College Aquarium Science Program, like the research facilities at NIMREC, like the pending sighting of OMSI in Newport. And you also see some remarkable developments on the South Beach in the area of tourism, such as the Oregon Coast Aquarium, the sighting of the Rogue Brewery, the Newport Wine and Seafood Festival. And all of these things find their impetus at the Hatfield Marine Science Center. Now, later during this session, you're going to hear proposals to expand the Hatfield Marine Science Center, adding another 500 undergraduate students and adding about another 150 professional staff that is going to take Hatfield from a position where it has a significant role in the issues that we are addressing along the rim of the Pacific Ocean to the leading role in questions like climate change, ocean acidification, shellfish die-off, ocean warming, and the resiliency of our excellent fishing fleet here in Oregon. And you have to ask yourself, when you look at those kinds of developments, where do they all come from? I mean, what's the impetus for all of those kinds of significant developments? And the answer to that question is Dr. Laverne Weber. And I wanted to read from a letter that I submitted from his colleagues at Oregon State University, which says in part, Dr. Laverne Weber had a vision for what the Hatfield Marine Science Center could be. In his 25 years as director, he realized that vision. He brought in new federal partners to build a dynamic research environment. He cajoled the university to invest in teaching at all levels, K through gray, which is a quote that I really love, K through gray. He encouraged young scientists to ask hard questions and then look for the answers. He worked with the city of Newport and Lincoln County to position the Hatfield Marine Science Center as a key part of the coastal community. He was tireless and he was passionate. So in the resolution that you have before you, it details a number of specific contributions, specific roles, and specific positions. The letter that you have speaks to the respect that he had from his colleagues, but I just wanted to add a personal note, if I may, and that is that I first met Dr. Weber, I think, in the fall of 1976. I was an undergraduate at Oregon State, and he was the new dean of the graduate program there. And as an undergraduate, I was looking to pursue a graduate degree, and I needed some assistance with university policies to make that possible. I got an appointment with Dr. Weber. I think it maybe lasted about 8 minutes. He listened to my concerns. He proposed a solution. He solved my problem. I left, and I think by dinner he'd probably even forgotten the meeting. But he changed my life. And I think that really what that speaks to is the fact that he was a gentleman who identified problems, found solutions to them, and moved on, and made a very meaningful impact in the lives of his students, the life of his community, and the economic health of an entire region. So I'm very pleased to present this resolution to you honoring his well-lived life, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, with that, I would accept a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move HCR 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Gilliam has moved HCR 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? If not, the motion passes. Representative Gomberg, would you like to carry this on the floor?
With pleasure.
Fantastic. So I'll close the public hearing and work session.
Thank you.
And
all.
With that, we are adjourned. We are adjourned. I never know when I'm.